We created this thing called Dear Wesley in case there's something that needs to be addressed immediately, or we felt like the Spirit was pushing us to talk about a different topic, and today is exactly that. So today, what we're going to be doing, I'm going to kind of give you a preview of what's going to happen later today, which is we're going to be grieving today. Next slide. There we go. Today we're going to be grieving today as a community. And if you've never done that before, or you feel like grieving is a thing you do on your own, yes, grieving is something you do on your own, but it's also something we should do as a community. So before we get into that, and the grieving part, Pastor Stan's going to lead us in that. I'm going to be giving a little small talk before to answer this question, which is, why is it important to grieve as a community? And if you've never heard of people grieving together as a community or as a church, this might be helpful. And so I wanted to give a little backdrop to what we're about to do. So we're going to be looking at two passages today, and they're both from the book of Luke. And one's from the beginning of the book of Luke, and the other one's from the end of the book. And they're meant to be read to compare with each other, and you'll see why in a second. So let's start with Luke chapter 2. Verse 22 through 52, and I'm not going to read the passage to you because I want to spend more time grieving as a community later, but I'll give you a quick summary of what happens here. Jesus, this is the only story in the Bible where Jesus is actually like a kid. He's like early teens age, and as every Jewish family does, they caravan together and they head over to Jerusalem, which they didn't live at. You know, they live quite a while away from there. They will walk there, and for what reason? Well, they had to celebrate Passover. And so what they do is they go there and they have this huge celebration. It's not a one-day deal. It goes for a few days. And in this story that we find in Luke chapter 2, it says that it takes place on the third day of Passover, and the Passover happens in a city. This is the city walls, in a city called Jerusalem. And then right after that, something interesting happens. There are Mary and Joseph, a man and a woman, are walking away. So they're moving away from Jerusalem. And as they're going on there, you know, they're walking on this journey and they have a long ways ahead of them. They're like filled with excitement. They're like, yeah, you know, did you see how they're playing those trumpets? Like, oh, hey, look at that. Did you see that talk that priest gave? Is that like, we're all like, yeah. Remember the bread and the drinks and all the other stuff we had? Like, yeah, that was cool. It's so nice to see cousin so-and-so there. So they're filled with joy. They're really happy. So next slide. So they're happy. They're excited. And as they're traveling, next slide, they realize something because they have their son Jesus, who's the Son of God, you know, right? What they discover is that he is missing. They're like, wait a minute, have you seen Jesus? Like, no, I thought he was with you. Like, wait a minute, maybe he's in the back of the lot. No, where did he go? And it turns out Jesus is still at Jerusalem talking with scholars at such a young age. But the story here is that on the third day after, or during the celebration, they're leaving Jerusalem, and they're happy, they're excited, and on their way home, they realize they thought Jesus was with them and found out that he really wasn't. That's supposed to be compared to one of the last stories of the book of Luke, which is in chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. And the reason we know that these two stories are supposed to be read together is because it starts like this. On the third day of Passover, a group of people, a man and a woman, they're actually disciples of Jesus, they're leaving Jerusalem. Now, if you know the context of the story, you know that Jesus died on the cross, and there's rumors of Jesus coming back from the dead. But there's some disciples who are like, there's no way. And so, whereas the first story, they're leaving with joy, the second story, they're leaving with sadness and grief. They're like, I can't believe that he's not with us anymore. Yep. Like, they're really sad. And what's interesting is these two people who are walking, next slide, there we go. As they're walking, same as the first story, except it's the opposite. A third person joins in and says, hey, can I walk with you? And they join. The whole time they thought that they were walking with some stranger, but only to find out at the end that it was Jesus that was walking with them all along. In one story, in their joy, they didn't even know that Jesus has left them. In the second story, in their grief, They didn't know Jesus was with them, but they were actually with them the whole time. This is what a scholar, Albert Sue, I don't know how to pronounce Sue, said. He said, the lesson for us is that sometimes when times are good, we get caught up in everyday life and don't notice if God is there or not. Wouldn't you say this is true? You're probably watching, I don't know, some of you guys are probably watching the Dodger game yesterday, and you're like, oh my gosh, the Yankees had no chance. Now, at any point at that, did you think, I wonder if God's with us right now? Right? When we're having a good time, we don't really stop to think if God is really with us, and he's still at Jerusalem. Like, oh, right. But the opposite is also true, which is this. But at times of loss and tragedy, when we experience grief, and for a lot of us, we are experiencing grief right now, we think God is absent. We think he is no longer there, he doesn't care for us, and we're on our own. Our downcast eyes cannot see the God who walks beside us. These people who thought they lost everything, and they were like, it's so sad that Jesus died. All along, Jesus was with them. So he tackles this interesting question, which is a question that we all ask. Where is God when it hurts? I'm sure a lot of us have asked that question. I feel so empty, or there's a part of me that's missing. What am I supposed to do? This is what he says. He is with us when life seems the darkest, when we feel most hopeless, when he seems most distant. At these times, God draws closest to us in unexpected and mysterious ways. When we are at our darkest, we may not see him, we may not hear him, we may not feel him. People might try to convince us that he's with us, but no matter what happens, we're convinced that we're alone. Jesus could be walking alongside of us for this long journey, and we might not even notice it, but he is with us. So he continues, he concludes by saying, our grief journey may be much like that of the disciples on the road to Emmaus, those two people in the second story. In our grief and loss, Jesus comes alongside us. He is not intrusive. He's not going to be like, Kotz, wake up. I'm right here. He's not going to slap me, or he's not going to trip me. He's not going to cause some thunder, lightning thing, a spectacle in front of me to remind me that he's with me. He's not going to be intrusive. He's gentle. But he is available to break bread with us and rekindle our hope. The point that I want us to know, there's two points I want to make. The first one is this, that God is closest to us when we are in the most pain. We may not hear it. We may not sense it. Next one right here. It's difficult to hear, see, and sense God's presence in the midst of our pain. Isn't that true? We've all had experiences like this. Some are greater. Some may not be as great. But the bottom line is, when we are in pain, we don't hear or see or sense God, even though he's right there with us. And what we know about God is that he is an empathetic God. He's always saying, I'm here to cry with you. I'm here to weep with you. For those of us who are suffering, I'm here to suffer with you. Suffer with you to a point where I'm even willing to die on a cross. The most painful way for someone to die at that time. He's like, I'm willing to go through that because it is so important for me to walk with you through this journey that you're on right now. So I've been asking myself, what is the thing that we could do for people who are hurt right now? And some of you have already given food, right? Not too long ago, in January, there's fires that were happening in LA. And some of you also said, hey, I want to know how I could help. And that is a natural response, and that is a loving response. But for those of us who don't have the means to do that, like what is the thing we can do? Well, as it turns out, in Eastern cultures, which the Bible is written in that culture, in Eastern cultures, they had this weird practice that when I read it for the first time, I'm like, that's weird. And then I thought about it more and I realized, oh, me being born in Japan, we did this too. So let me explain to you what I'm talking about. In the Bible, there's this Jewish leader, his name is Jairus, and he finds out that his daughter, who is sick, has just passed away. And then they gave you this little passing description of what happened at Jairus' house. When Jesus arrives at Jairus' house, the author notes that there are people who are basically hired to cry with the family. I'm like, that's kind of weird. Like, why would you do that? Like, this is the first time I was exposed to this idea of communal grieving, to grieve together. Like, wow, there's people who are hired to cry with you? Like, that's weird. But then I thought about it. And then the more I thought about it, I realized, wait a minute, there's something similar in my Eastern culture, Japanese culture, and it's called tsurasa. Tsurasa is basically, it's applying emotional burdens on myself, to oneself, as a way to help carry the burden of someone in pain. So if somebody lost somebody, but I didn't, I will try to put myself in their shoes and feel the same pain. And that, in some ways, helps carry that person's burden. And like I said, this is exactly what Jesus does. Jesus walks beside the people who are hurting. Even if they don't sense it, they don't hear it, or they don't see it, Jesus, that's what Jesus is doing. Jesus cries with people. You guys know the story about Jesus' friend Lazarus who dies, and Jesus was supposed to be there, and his sisters are saying, Jesus, if you were here on time, my brother wouldn't have died. Now, Jesus is there with the intent of reviving Lazarus. He knows he has the power to do that. He knows that he's going to go up to his tomb and says, you know, Lazarus, come out of the tomb, and he's going to come out, da-da, right? He knows he could do that. But you know what Jesus' first action is? He weeps with them. Because more so than doing some magic trick, doing some miracle, Jesus' number one concern is that he weeps with people who are weeping. Jesus is giving us an example of tsurasa, well, a Japanese version of it at least. He cries with people who are crying. He suffers alongside the people who are suffering. But I don't know if that really helps or not, because if you can't hear, see, or sense God in your pain, and God is there weeping with you, what's the use? Right? So what happens when the one in pain cannot sense God's presence? He is there with us, walking with us, crying with us, carrying the burden with us. But if you can't see it or sense it, what good does it do? And this is why communal grieving is so important, because the church in this instance becomes the presence of God. God is weeping and suffering alongside the people who are hurt. And if they can't see God doing it, then the body of Christ needs to be that body, the tangible evidence that God is there with that person. So, before I pass it on to Stan, I just want to make this last point. We cannot erase the weight of the grief a person is carrying, right? Because I think that's our first response is, what can I do to make that person hurt less? And I think that's a very kind thing to think. But we do not have the ability, and neither does God have the ability, to wipe out and erase the pain or undo the thing that just happened. But what he can do, and what we can do on his behalf, is that we can enter into their world and help carry that grief alongside the person. And this is why it's so important that we grieve as a community. We're here to carry the pain with the people who are hurt. And that's the role of the church. And that is who we are as an extension of God. We are the tangible hands and feet of Jesus. And if somebody in our congregation is hurt, we are called to grieve with them.